This is a, you know, really beautiful vine maple. These ferns, I mean, there's just nothing that I like more than to see these sword ferns with the fronds that are almost 5 feet long. This one over here, this vine maple, you can see it's got that kind of strange, like, kind of metallic iridescent green, which is kind of typical. But right over here we've got this is the winter jasmine here.
Oh.
Not fragrant, but these are really good, like, if you want to plant this, these would be good for a lot of public art projects, because if you have a wall that you want some plant cascading down, this is a really good choice.
Is that right?
And again, you can kind of whack these back to the ground and they'll recover. But they're a bit of a...
No one's getting whacked here today, Jim.
No.
Thank you. We're going to go this way.
Yeah, let's do that. So I want to point out to you if we look ahead, we see this kind of this orange haze. That's the blood twig dogwood.
The blood twig dogwood.
Yeah.
God, I'm going to get that into a poem.
Yeah, no, I think it's essential. But you can see, too, what's so amazing about them is that the closer you get to the tips, the more you get like a kind of a, you know, almost a bright pink, kind of a neon pink. But at the stems, it's kind of more of a sober kind of, I don't know, bronze.
Brown, yeah, browns. You know, when I think of the dogwood and I think of the rhododendron, you know, I'm taken back to Auburn. I spent 17 years, 6 months, and 2 days there. And, you know, so Auburn was founded in 1891 as the town of Slaughter, as you probably
know.
And you see these dogwoods, and when these dogwoods, I guess they might be the Pacific dogwoods.
Yeah, Cornus natalia. Yeah.
Just remarkable.
Yeah.
To see these. And then to see some of the size of these rhododendrons. I mean, these become trees when they've been there for 100 years.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really remarkable. And these are the kind of rhododendrons that you really should water, especially when it, you know, gets hot. You know.
Yeah. So, well, when they get large, sometimes I've almost mistaken them for rhododendron or for madronas.
Yeah, because they can get huge.
And they actually can acquire a similar look.
Right.
Because they're related, of course.
So when we look at this kind of a dogwood, it's considerably different than a Pacific dogwood kind of thing.
This is more, instead of a tree with a single leader, this is really more of a multi-stemmed shrub. And I think what you do with these often is you kind of whack them to the ground, and you get all this new growth. And the new growth will have the color in it. These ones here are even dogwoods. This is the Cornus sericea kelsii. We'll walk over there and look at them. But you see how it has, it's kind of gold and it has the red tips?
Yeah.
That's a dwarf red twig dogwood, which, again, it's the same, basically the same type of plant, a suckering shrub. This is just a much smaller one.
Do you know that Zappa song, Camarillo Brillo?
Oh, yeah.
And she was breeding a dwarf, but she wasn't done yet. He wasn't talking about trees. I don't
know.
No.
I don't know if he thought much about trees. But,
no,
yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah. But I want to point this plant out here. Now, we're a little early to experience this, but this is the Azara microphylla. And this is this tree is, you can almost see them now. It's kind of got these tiny, tiny yellow flowers at the base of these leaves. And in a few weeks, I don't know how many weeks, this is one of the last plants to really do its thing here. But this plant produces the most amazing scent, which, you know, some people liken to chocolate, some people liken to vanilla. One friend of mine who worked in this park said that it smelled like someone had just pulled a tray of cookies out of the oven.
Nice. So, kind of like that.
So So, and this is an extremely large one. This plant's, I think, native to Chile. But it'd be good to come back here in a few weeks. So you can see the flowers, very small, but they have yet to open, but they're not going to look too much bigger than that.
My phone's about to die. I'm running out of battery here, so.
Okay, yeah, there's so much to...
I guess listening to Santana's Let the Children Play on my phone on the way wasn't a good idea.
So here's a Garrya elliptica. This is a plant that grows on the Oregon coast. And it's native to the Oregon coast. And it's got these long kind of... its common name is the silk tassel, because that's kind of what these flowers look like. Now, when these get a little further along, and again, this is a perfect example of wind pollination, because when the wind blows these, all the pollen kind of drifts. But it's really quite a spectacular plant. There was one over here which they cut down. It's starting to grow back, but it was just getting too large. But it had extremely long catkins. That's what we call these particular flowers. But this can have a really dramatic effect, especially if you walk back from it and you just see all these kind of pendulous flowers. And they look heavy. And I wanted to point out, too, this climbing hydrangea here. They get pretty aggressive. If you've been to the Intimon Theater Playhouse, they're growing up on those concrete pillars. So here's this is again a very different dogwood than the trees that you usually associate with the family, the dogwood family. So and as now that we're on like strange cousins that don't often kind of look like one another, this is the winter honeysuckle. Most of us think of honeysuckles as vines, like the Japanese honeysuckle, but this is the winter honeysuckle, and if you smell these flowers, they have a very different scent than the honeysuckle scent that we think of. These have very very citrus, very lemon-like scent, which I'm.
Oh, that's nice.
I know it's very nice. It's a very nice scent, and these are fairly. These are pretty tough plants, as you can see. I think this one. This one's Standishii. The other one next to it is Fragrantissima. I really can't tell them apart. But again, just a great scent. And again, a really easy plant to grow, although, again, maybe not something that's so good for a small residential landscape. But, here's the gold twig dogwood. And again, look how fantastic it looks with this black mondo grass underneath. The contrast is
mondo grass.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
See, if it weren't you being the botanist or student of plant life that you are, mondo would be an adjective.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but it's I don't know how it attained that.
It's mondo status.
Yeah, that moniker of. The world.
Yeah.
So I want to point these out to you too. Since we were looking at some hellebores before, this is the Corsican hellebore. It's the largest species of hellebore. It's kind of the most drought tolerant, the most kind of rugged looking. I really quite like these. And you can see the flowers are kind of this pure kind of light green color. But these are a really good plant. I like them. You've got room for them, but
and they got the jagged sort of
serrated.
It's almost like the what was that play with a man eating plant in it?
Oh yeah, yes,
Little Shop of Horrors. That's right. Yeah, has that kind of Little Shop of Horrors sort of serrated feeling
to it. It does have that. Now this plant here, this is called the winter sweet or the Chimonanthus praecox. And I think that this may be my favorite of all the scents in the garden. So I'm kind of
biased
here, but
wow.
Now this has a bit of a kind of a
holy shit. That's you don't get that every day. You know what I mean?
No, and it's kind of a warm spice. but it's also kind of citrusy and sweet, and it's got all those things combined.
Does it have consciousness altering properties, do you think?
One has to suppose.
Maybe we should just sit here this afternoon and smoke a little bit and see what happens.
Well, you know, I do know that if you, I planted one of these in my yard, and it hasn't really produced, it hasn't grown to the point where it produces a lot of flowers, but I cut one of the flowers, I cut a branch with a few flowers on it and brought it inside, and the scent was so overpowering once, you know, just like a small cluster of flowers. Once it was in my house,
you couldn't get it out of there.
No, it was like the most. It was just overwhelming.
Now the tag. I wish my phone still had energy, because I would take a picture of the tag. It says Chimonanthus praecox, winter sweet, China, 1896 to 45.
Or 1996.
Is that? I think that's
1896.
Yeah. So does that suggest when it was brought here to this area, or what's that?
I don't remember how this nomenclature works. It might be part of the Arboretum's own system of
keeping track of
these things.
Yeah, because that's amazing.
So anyway,
and then there are little berries. So these are just fruits that are flowers that haven't.
Yeah, these are just the flower buds waiting.
Yeah, so we've got another couple of weeks on this one, huh?
Yeah, you know, this will keep doing its thing.
I might need another hit of this in about 3 or 4 days, actually.
yeah. No, I mean,
what are they? Do they do anything with the flowers besides?
I've never read anything to suggest that they're used in, because you smell that and you think, wow, you know. Like, you could kind of market this fragrance, or maybe you could make something to eat with it, because it makes me kind of think about some great dessert that I've never tasted before. So you can see now we're back here at the Cornus sanguinea, or blood twig dogwood.
Blood twig dogwood.
Yeah. You can see like how the tips of these tend to be almost kind of neon pink.
Yeah.
Instead of just this kind of dull orange.
Yeah.
But it's really quite spectacular. But again, I think one of the things is to have it planted in front of a dark evergreen tree like this western red cedar.
Right.
It really makes it, you know, whatever you're dealing with in the Northwest, like flowers on a flowering cherry or whatever, it's like it looks so good when it's, you know, in front of a dark screen that like our conifers can provide here.
Yeah, you got to have a backdrop.
I think that's part of the Northwest aesthetic.
Well, that's part of the art of creating a garden like this, is knowing how these things are going to work together and having a sense of the systemic view, shall we say.
Yeah, and how to integrate them into the natural landscape. I think that's the key to, you know, designing a garden is basically taking the site and having the site kind of dictate, you know, where things go.
Yeah. Now, you look at the paperback maple here, and this has got the same kind of madrone sort of peely bark properties.
Oh, yeah. I was going to talk about this before when we were over by the crepe myrtle, but the exfoliating bark.
Exfoliating bark.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
So here we have, this is the Acer griseum, or the paper bark maple. And this is the Chinese white birch, Betula albosinensis. And the reason that these trees, and like I said, the Legerstromia, the crepe myrtle, and other plants that have exfoliating bark, and you can see how dramatic it is up here where these sheets are basically just coming off. And then the Madrona also has exfoliating bark. But the reason that they do this is most of these plants grow in, they're forest edge plants, so they might be growing in an area where they're going to be getting a lot of sun and where they're going to be subjected to other kind of elements of the weather. But what happens is that when the temperature drops, you know, the bark itself might have a tendency to freeze. But then the following morning when the sun rises and the trunks are exposed to the sun, that they'll heat up so quickly that there's, you know, the potential for the bark to crack and for the basically for the tree to get seriously damaged. So so basically exfoliating bark is kind of this evolutionary deterrent to that type of damage. So by already having the bark that's kind of splitting and peeling off, it keeps, you know, the trees immune from that type of damage.
It's a little sacrifice.
Yeah, and it looks great.
And this is what it would seem to me, not being a paper maker, but it would seem to me this is the kind of stuff you'd use to make paper.
Yeah, I always assumed that it had to do with the with grinding the pulp of the actual wood, but you know, I think you might have to consult with someone who's more knowledgeable about these things, because I know that, you know, an artist like Paul Horiuchi tended to use mulberry paper because the wood itself has some properties, some kind of binding properties, and you know, some properties that make it good for doing his collage. But what I like about these white birches here, these Chinese white birches, is these strange red highlights that almost look like they're coming from the inside. Just like, you know, when you see somebody who's been out in the cold and their face is flushed or something, it's got that same kind of quality of translucence.
And then you see knots which have this kind of human eye effect.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like, oh my God, what kind of ancestor is trapped in there trying to get out?
No, absolutely. Yeah, the eyes are very, very interesting. So this one here has been damaged by some vandals, but again, you look at the that dark brown with the white and the orange. It does have kind of a Horiuchi-like torn paper collage quality.
So you think someone came here with some kind of fire and just tried to torch this thing?
I think what they did was they tore off the peeling bark.
Right. Oh, they went to the peeling part.
Yeah, they peeled the bark off and they damaged it. Yeah.
Like this. Kind of went like that?
Yeah.
Okay. I see.
So here's another one of those Daphnes.
Yeah.
So here's the type of rhodia I was talking about before. That's got the large evergreen leaves, and you can see here's some flowers right here. This is a early blooming one. It doesn't have just says hybrid. It doesn't say what it is. And yeah, see a lot of these hybrid ones, the flowers just die and sort of like stay on like that, which is why they have to be deadheaded. But you know, the species they're much better flower abscission. Here you can see more of these hellebores starting to emerge.
And when you say deadheaded, there's nothing about Jerry Garcia.
No, I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure what sort of gardening they did there in the hate.
Well, I think we know what kind of gardening they did. And I think that kind of gardening, the technology has improved considerably in the last 40 years, especially in British Columbia.
Yeah. So I always like to, this is a bit of a diversion, but these Japanese maples are so dramatic that they need to be examined.